Hello, this is your host, Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, here at the Education Gadfly Show podcast, online at edexcellence.net. Please join me in welcoming my guest co-host, a man who is a true Washington insider, Dave DeShriver.
Hello, Michael.
So, Dave, you've been playing along with our Washington Insider daily tracking poll on who will be the next education secretary.
Yes, I have.
Although I will note that there have been a few days that you've been delinquent with your predictions. I can't blame you. This thing has dragged on now for 4 weeks.
Well, for the good news is that I had a bet that it would be settled before December 1st. I was on the right side of that.
Oh, nice.
So it works out in my favor. And, you know, it's just not a priority. As much as education advocates would love to make it a priority, it unfortunately is not, and this is going to wait.
I know, it's true. And so, of course, he announces his national security team and his economic team. It's also clear that healthcare is going to be the key domestic priority.
Have you seen what that eats up of the federal revenue?
Yeah, well, so that makes sense.
Yeah.
So he's put Melody Barnes as the head of the DPC. She's a healthcare expert. Right?
Appropriately.
Well, just like George W. Bush put Margaret Spellings as the head of the DPC. She was an education expert. I think that shows you where the priorities are.
Oh, I think you're right. And it's going to be, I think education is going to have to ride on the coattails of any economic issue. That's clear. And whether we see anything in early 2009 outside of capital investments, not likely.
All right. That's probably true. So the only thing you should know about Dave, you know, you are, first of all, an attorney at Brewstein and Massavit.
Oh, yes, indeed.
Yes, representing important clients.
Crumpf.
Yeah, very nicely. Yes, I like
polishing
your cigar.
My white shoes.
You know, Dave is my friend who encouraged me to get an iPhone.
Ugh,
and I have to say,
time.
I love it. I tried to watch myself on CNN on the iPhone the other day. Yeah. It didn't work.
Oh, yeah.
I can't figure out how to make that work. So maybe you can teach me how to do that.
Someone can fix that.
Yeah, but that doesn't really stroke my ego because it's pretty embarrassing. I didn't wear a suit that day.
Cardigan.
I had this old blue sweater. You could see the little old balls on it.
From being,
you know. Okay, we got a lot to cover, Dave. No more time for chit-chat. We're going to play Pardon the Gadfly.
Mm-hmm.
We got a research minute. We're going to rate that reform. Christina, get us started.
Topic one, the state of the transition. President-elect Obama has selected his economic team and national security team. Will his domestic policy team be next? What to make of Linda Darling-Hammond's prominent role? Is Obama really a reformer or not?
Well, I think the big question is he a reformer? One thing to consider, I think he's intellectually honest about a lot of issues, but he's surrounding himself with those who are traditionally not as aggressive or innovative on some of these ideas. Mm-hmm. I think they all value human capital, but that's also a big trap. I mean, that can cut either way pretty easily. So the reform aspects, he talks, well, at least on the campaign, he certainly worked his middle on charter schools, financing, merit pay.
I think that's
so
all
we'll
fair.
See.
I mean, listeners know that I'm not a big fan of Linda Darling-Hammond, who I think I may have passed on the street today in downtown Washington, D.C. I was pretty sure.
She's moving in?
I wasn't sure what do I say? Linda, is that you? It's me, Mike. I've been blasting you on my blog and podcast about how horrible a pick you are to head the transition team. I didn't think that was really appropriate.
Well, the good news for you, it's a transition team. So she'll be in the White House, but she may not be in the Department of Education.
Well, is that good news? I mean, Margaret Spellings was in the White House, and she, you know,
well,
basically
she did.
Pulled all the strings.
Some in this room claim run some things from the White House. That's true.
That is true. So, all right, but you're right that there is a team of rivals within the education transition
team? There may be a team of rivals. I think there are some people there who have some fairly innovative ideas on financing, innovative ideas.
Like Robert Gordon, for example, Center for American Progress, worked for Joel Klein on pushing some way to student funding reforms.
Right, and And that may pay off. It's hard to tell because I don't think we're going to see any real traction on substantive K-12 issues until we address some early issues.
Okay. So what you're saying is none of this really matters because we're not doing K-12 policy anytime
soon. We're probably not going to do K-12. Early childhood, some finance, some capital financing issues. Mm-hmm. But the meat of it, I think we still need some vetting. And so all those within the Obama camp are going to have to fight this one out a bit longer.
Topic two, Michelle Rhee is still interested in K-12, and she is on the cover of Time this week with a broom. Was posing as a witch a bad PR move? What?
Yeah, from the Monty Python movie.
The witch?
What was it? How do you know she's a witch?
It's a good question.
All right, so because she looks like one.
Okay, is she a witch then?
I don't know. Does she float? Was that it? Is she a witch?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does
she float into the wood or does she All right.
Well, okay. Well,
sorry, Christina, I interrupted you.
Is she right that education is too touchy-feely? Or is Randy Weingarten right that Rhee is all scorched earth?
Okay. Well, first of all, I do not think Michelle Rhee is a witch. All right. I was just kidding about that, just to be clear. But I do think, let's all admit, and we all know, that there was a terrible photo of her on the cover of Time. I'm not sure why she let that happen. I don't know. I mean, that was really, whew. But here's the thing. I love Michelle. I think she's doing a hell of a job. She's kicking butt, which is what you need to do in a system like DC's. However, I do think there is a role to play in inspiring people to perform at their best levels. Perhaps she's, you know, pushed a little bit too much on the other extreme, which is to be a scold. The worry is whether or not great teachers in DC and good teachers in DC think that she's on their side, or whether they are afraid of her also, you know, like the bad teachers are.
I think that's true, but that assumes that you have a foundation of good teachers and a good core of fiscal and programmatic programs. I think she's working on an economy of scale here, and that in the early years, she's there to clear the house, to make some serious changes on how they handle their programs, how they handle their finances, and then really make some room, once you clear that up, for some good people, human capital issues.
So basically, Dave, you're saying she should be as mean as she wants because there's no good teachers in Washington, D.C. public schools?
I think she's working. I said, not that there aren't, but for an economy of scale, there are enough bad teachers and there are enough bad leaders that she would rather just clear them out, create the incentives, and see what fills in the holes.
Mm-hmm. By the way, you know, for DC teachers out there, Dave does live in the district. He is often found in the mornings at the 17th Street YMCA, if you want to go pay him a visit.
Yeah. Just kidding. Well, I also live in the district, so I'll have children going to these schools.
Well, you live in the district. That could be a long time now, unless your wife is pregnant.
No.
Dave is a very fast runner, though, so if the teachers start to run after him, I bet you could outrun them.
Yeah. Well, you know, let's see what happens in the long run, because those who stay, I think, should be rewarded, and they likely will be. And those who leave, for example, those Washington Post articles of the fired principals.
Yeah.
It was surprising that everyone who was quoted had no problem that they were laid off. Huge sign. So I think early she's going to raise things, and then she'll continue to develop on the touchy-feely side, as you suggest.
Okay, so watch out for that. The touchy-feely Michelle Rhee coming up.
Yeah.
Last one. Lou Gerstner wants to nationalize education and abolish local school boards.
Lou.
Is he on to something?
Well, I think he is on to something there. You know what reminds me of Matthew Miller's study on...
Yes, his article.
Yeah, nationalize the schools a little bit.
Yeah.
And he's right, you know, in that a century ago, it made sense to have local control.
Mm-hmm.
But what sense does it make now?
Dave, I thought your law firm represented school districts and things.
We do, but we represent progressive change. We want to make sure that things actually work.
Well, you know, I mean, a lot to like about Lou Gerstner's article. Of course, I support national standards and testing, and that was a big part of what he had to say. But I'm not sure it's smart strategically to link national testing with abolishing local school boards. You don't necessarily have to put those together. Nor do I think abolishing local school boards right now would do a lot of good. I mean, it's not like the states have this enormous capacity to manage individual schools directly. They sure haven't done a very great job managing individual charter schools directly. So you know, I think you need something between a big state and a little school. And if it's not maybe it shouldn't look like a school district does today, but you got to have something.
I think that's right. But it's also from a rhetorical position. If you're going to start this debate, I think you aim high and just start to clear everything out in the same way Michelle Rhee's doing it.
You like to get out front.
I like to get out front. I think you start aggressive, you start big, and then you work it as you move along.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's all the time we have for Pardon the Gadfly. We have, I don't know if this is a new segment since you've been here, Dave, but it is now time for our Research Minute. So, you know, Amber, we have been receiving quite a lot of fan mail about the Research Minute. I mean, I open up the fan mail and I think, oh, somebody's going to say something great about the podcast. And they often do, but it increasingly leads with, I love the Research Minute. I don't understand why you don't give Amber maybe 2 minutes.
I know.
Which I appreciate the enthusiasm of our readers, but I think, again, 2 minutes, that's a crazy idea. But Peter Seip, who is a reading teacher at Williamsburg Collegiate Charter School in Brooklyn, a shout out to Peter. He wrote in to tell us how much he likes this segment. So we aim to please Amber. Lately, you've been coming in under a minute. I just want you to say you are allowed to have your full minute this week.
Okay, because I feel like that was some perverse sort of backward psychology there. I gave them less, and then they just want more.
Yes,
you know?
That's how it works. Yeah, that's how it works. Okay, Amber, so go ahead, get started.
Okay, everyone would love to be able to predict in the hiring process whether a would-be teacher is going to be effective in the classroom. Well, there is a very neat study out this week by Tom Kane and other top-notch researchers that's called Can You Recognize an Effective Teacher When You Recruit One? It examines whether cognitive variables, these are things like SAT scores and math knowledge, and non-cognitive variables, these are things like personality traits and one's propensity to be an extrovert, predict teacher effectiveness. They surveyed 400 new math teachers in New York City and analyzed the student achievement scores of students in almost 1,000 schools. They found that an increase in either cognitive or non-cognitive variables was associated with statistical increases in math achievement. So, bottom line, school districts may want to collect more data on would-be teachers than the things that they collect now, like type of certification, since a bundling of qualifications and not one particular qualification corresponds to more effective teaching.
And that was 60 seconds on the dot. Amber Winkler, you are just getting better than ever, I tell you.
I
really believe it's because of your cognitive abilities, but also your non-cognitive
abilities. I mean, did you get
abilities?
All that? I felt like that was kind of a heavy minute.
That was a heavy one. Who wrote the bell curve? Minute.
Who was Charles Murray?
Charles Murray, his new book, his new education book.
Four Truths.
Did that pull that from the new education book, The Four Truths?
No, I don't think so. No.
Yeah, he hammers on the issue of IQ and the compilation of various things to identify
sort of like
success.
Like Goldman's emotional intelligence, too.
Yeah.
Same idea.
But this is huge because we've known from past research that I think what Dan Goldhaber once wrote that 97% of what makes a teacher effective, we can't measure. I mean, things like SAT scores and subject matter knowledge, we know those things matter, but they only seem to matter a little bit. While there's this vast domain of things that matter, but we can't measure them. You know, it might be whether they're an extrovert, I guess.
Or measure their organization skills, their planning skills. Yeah.
We don't know how.
Well, researchers haven't been able to establish a link, but now that's why this is an important study. They're trying to look at that. You know, I guess there's increasingly some of these interview protocols. There's one by Gallup or the Haberman one.
These pre-screeners, they give sort of candidates these pre-screeners that measure some of these, more personality type things.
I think the NFL does that in their recruiting training camps.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, just figure out if these people are worth the investment.
What do you think, Amber? Is this going to lead to change in practice, do you suspect?
Well, it's going to be expensive to be collecting, all of these data on would-be teachers. So I hope so, because I think it's just fascinating, because we don't see stuff like this in education. And this is what the business folks do. Yeah. And we're seeing a lot of other, areas doing this and looking for these traits. And we always hear people say, you recognize a good teacher when you see one. There's art to it. This is actually starting to put some science behind some of those theories we have.
Well, and I got to say, to Teach for America, they've been doing this for years. They've over the years developed better and better ways of figuring out which of these best and brightest kids are going to actually go in and be strong teachers. Mm-hmm. But a lot of that information is proprietary. They haven't released. I think they should really open it up. They could go train school districts on how to do this themselves. Maybe the New Teacher Project does some of that. But I think there's a real need for this.
Yeah. I think the big problem, though, is the question of return on investment. How much does it cost to provide these kind of assessments? It makes sense if you're recruiting an NFL quarterback, you got to make sure this guy's stable. But if you're recruiting a teacher, so much is put into the test, and are you really going to get the return that you should be getting?
Particularly if they're going to leave after a few years.
Yeah, particularly if we don't pay teachers enough, we don't recruit the best ones.
Mm-hmm. All right, Amber, so what's the song?
The song is Johnny Mercer. It's called Personality, and one of the lines is, "She's got great personality," because we know that personality may be an important characteristic now in teaching.
No doubt it must have been easy to see that she knew how to use her personality.
I like
it. Nice. The big band sound.
Yeah,
I tell you, we've got
big band.
We really are all over the map musically here, huh?
Yeah, well, Laura helps me expand my musical horizons.
Wow. So. Now, the one problem is that we did put out a paper a few years ago at Fordham by Bill Damon talking about how it's a terrible idea to try to figure out teacher candidates' personalities and eliminate people based on their personality.
Mm. Well, that happens all the time anyways, doesn't it?
Yeah, this is the dispositions debate. Anyways, that's time for another time. Amber Winkler with the Research Minute.
Yeah, right.
Thanks for being on the show.
You are welcome.
I tell you, Dave, I mean, with star power like that, it's hard. I mean, Rick and I, we don't have much future in this show, let's face it.
No, well, all the fan mail apparently is about the Research Minute.
It is, and now you understand why. Okay, Stafford, so it is time to rate that reform. What are we rating this week?
Well, this week we're going to talk about budgets. Of course, the economy is a mess and the Dow is plunging and budgets are tight. And we've been hearing for months now about how districts are strapped for cash. And that's basically the story for the Poway Unified School District outside San Diego. Scrambling to cut costs, the district decided that they would reduce their materials budgets by 30%. And Superintendent Don Phillips explained that this seemed a better choice than personnel cutting. But it also meant that calculus teacher Tom Farber was handed $200 fewer this year than last for printing costs. So what was he going to do? Well, he could have just given fewer handouts, quizzes, and tests to his students, which I'm sure would have made them overjoyed. But as Farber explained, giving fewer tests to save money also meant that he would be giving fewer opportunities to students to practice for the AP calculus exam. A nice thought.
Mm-hmm. And
teacher. We can't test me
now. There you go. Uh-huh. His fellow teachers were simply asking for donations from parents. But Farber put on his thinking cap and came up with a rather creative solution. He would sell ad space on the front pages of his tests. Mm-hmm. So his customers now pay per ad $10 for a quiz, $20 for a test, and $30 for the semester final.
Brilliant.
Yeah, there you go. So
what a distraction.
Most have been local businesses advertising their wares or parents paying for inspirational quotes, and the students seem to like it. So I can't really blame them when faced with this quote from Veclav Havel at 8 o'clock in the morning, "Keep the company of those who seek the truth and run from those who have found it." Deep. But some students are not so keen on the idea. One senior actually thinks the ads are rather pointless. In fact, he said, "I'm always hoping that someone will sponsor it with a trig formula or something useful." Well, here's to wishing that someone would pay to help you cheat. But the good news for Farber is that he's already raised $350 with his ad selling gig, and he's giving the extra dough to the math department to help the other teachers with their supplies. So there are two players here, obviously, the district and Farber himself. And in terms of problem definition, I'll give him an A. You know, strapped budgets are strapped budgets. And it's important to recognize that we need to cut in these lean times. But as for execution, the results are mixed. We'll go with the bad news first. Poway Unified, you get an F. I really cannot explain why the district would decide to cut materials over personnel. It's just a bad decision on all fronts. And cut the useless administrators.
Stafford doesn't like teachers either.
She took hours.
No, no, no.
That's unbelievable.
Administrators.
She doesn't like administrators. Okay.
We always have too many, right? But as for Farber, I thought his plan was rather innovative, even if it's only a new take on an old strategy, and so I gave him a B+. For now, he's limiting his customers to mom-and-pop operations and parents wanting to share inspirational quotes. Obviously, this would probably not work if he gets corporate sponsorship like Coca-Cola. And kudos to him for recognizing that students need to be adequately prepared for their AP exams and refusing to cut down on the number of tests and quizzes he administers. Mm-hmm.
I'm liking it, Stafford, very nicely.
Yeah.
I think there are other solutions that are possible here.
Yeah, what companies are advertising on this? I mean, what student taking a test with no money seems to be a good market audience? That I don't get.
Oh, come on, well, Dave. I mean, adolescents are a huge
Well, their parents are huge.
No, the adolescents are too. Come
they say,
on,
Johnny, what'd you do at class today? I took a test.
Well,
what are they going to tell? Oh, you should have seen what was on that test. Oh, this wonderful leather deluxe glove set.
They spend a lot of money.
Well, Farber was thinking that it would be, you know, tailor shops advertising for rental tuxes around prom.
Yeah, right.
And then the one that was actually quoted in the article was quite witty, actually. It said, brace for the semester with a new set of braces from Dr. Something and Something DDS.
And who doesn't want a new set of braces?
There you go. I mean, why not?
Well, thank you, Stafford. That was very informative. And kudos to this teacher that I think maybe even Dave DeShriver might like. We are out of time, but thank you for joining us on the show. Until next week.
Mike, it was my pleasure. I'm Dave DeShriver.
And I am Mike Petrilli of the Thomas B. Fordham Institute, signing off.